The next case is number 02-2371, Russell against the City of Milwaukee.
May it please the court, Willie J. Nunnering representing the plaintiffs. I would like to preface my argument by highlighting a major point in this case. When this complaint was filed, it was filed in state court, and it also embraced a state law claim. That state law claim was a Chapter 68 statutory administrative review, and it is separate and distinct from the constitutional claim. Judge Stadmuller and his order, and this is really one of the major objections, it is further ordered that Russell's action be and the same hereby dismissed with prejudice. Here Judge Stadmuller dismissed the entire action. Aside from the chastisement of myself for failure to file the appropriate substitution, we believe that he went too far in his decision. First, on the June 18, 2001 order, we attest and file an affidavit in the record that we as the plaintiff, that I never received that. That is in the record. Judge Stadmuller says, look, counsel has sent a letter saying we did file this. But if you look at, if one looks into the court record, and even I think the court's correspondence file, we're not going to see that. Even the filing on the record, there is no certification of service of process, no affidavit of mailing. We believe the June 18th did not come up until after the summary judgment was filed and basically the motion to dismiss, which in effect was a blindside. Again, I as counsel was derelict in not filing the appropriate substitution. The issue is whether 25A should be complied with literally or whether there is indeed a different standard. Judge Stadmuller, in his said, in his opinion, appendix page 9, says that this court relaxes the requirement here where the defendant makes the suggestion of plaintiff's death. So what he says here, we are relaxing our standard. We believe that this is not consistent or in compliance with Rule 25A. Now what is the real problem in this case? The real problem in this case is this. If the estate of Russell or his children sought to maintain their state law claim, which was originally in the state lawsuit, what the defendants will do, they will say, here's Stadmuller's decision. This is a final judgment. They will raise all kind of race judicata grounds, and therefore that couldn't go further. But Judge Stadmuller says nothing in his opinion regarding the state law claim. The state law claim was predicated and would have been predicated upon the sufficiency of the evidence. It should also be noted, what did defendants request? They requested partial summary judgment. They only requested summary judgment as it related to the constitutional claim. They did not request any relief on the state law claim. So what he took it upon himself in the dismissal in the entirety is a precluding of any further litigation on the state law claim. We believe that that was totally inappropriate. We also believe that on page 8 of his opinion, the court review of the record indicates that the defendant did not file a certificate of service at the time they filed a suggestion of death. But Horan, counsel for the defendant, attests in a signed letter to the court dated October 31, 2001, that the defendant did serve both Attorney Nunnery and Attorney Ingramire. Well, at that time, he's trying to justify his decision through this letter. There wasn't any compliance with the rules. There was not a certificate of service. There was not an affidavit of mailing. But when I filed an affidavit saying I didn't get it, he didn't take my word for it. I swore a statement. But when she sends a letter in, he takes her word for it. And I don't think that that's appropriate. The stakes were just simply too high in this matter.
Let me ask you a question. In the district judge's amended scheduling order, he asked that you substitute parties, because that required that Russell surviving spouse substitute parties on or before April 1st.
And
why
I did,
wasn't that filed in?
And I admitted to the court in my filings that I did not do that. I violated the court order. I should have been sanctioned on it, and I admitted that. I mean, I could say I don't think that that is an issue in terms of the dismissal of the entire matter in its entirety. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nuttery. We'll hear now from Ms. York.
Good morning. My name is Marita Hahn. I represent the appellees. I just would like to start my argument by correcting a few statements Attorney Nuttery said. The suggestion of death in the record was filed on June 18th. That was what the court records show. It was not filed after the summary judgment motion was filed. And I want to point out that, and I pointed this out in my brief, that in the response to my motion for partial summary judgment, Mr. Nuttery, on behalf of the decedent in this case, admitted that the suggestion of death on the record had been filed on June 18th. He also admitted in the response to summary judgment that there had been no substitution. Also, I did move for dismissal of the entire action, which included the pending state claim of the administrative review. I think that's all I wanted to correct at this point. The issue in this case is not the exercise of pendant jurisdiction, it's the application of 25A1 to the facts of this case. It's the appellee's contention that the district court properly concluded that they were not required to undertake the burden of identifying the successor or representative of the decedent. This conclusion is supported by the Second Circuit case of Unicorn, which are cited in my brief, as well as the facts of this case. Here, the estate was opened in Georgia, and the appellees were not aware of who or when the personal representative would be appointed. And to undertake that responsibility of investigating the estate in Georgia to find that out would be very burdensome, as the court indicated. Secondly, as the district court indicated in its decision, the requirement to identify the successor or personal representative is usually not required when there's no bad faith. And clearly there was no bad faith by the appellees in filing the suggestion of death on the record, nor was this a tactical maneuver as sometimes it is used for in some of the cases. The suggestion was filed 6 months after the fact of death was known. The suggestion of death was filed 2.5 months after the court's second deadline for substitution of parties was ignored. The suggestion was filed after a discussion with Mr. Nuttery, where he represented that the suggestion that the substitution would occur by April 1st, 2001. And as indicated in my affidavit filed in support of the motion to dismiss, I advised the court at that time that I had contemplated filing the suggestion in February, but refrained from doing so because of the representation made by Mr. Nuttery. But finally, and I think most importantly, the appellees addressed the constitutional claim which had been asserted by the decedent and fully briefed the issue in a summary judgment motion, which the court indicated it would have granted but was rendered moot by the dismissal. So clearly there was no bad faith. And as the court noted, it would be Mr. Nuttery and Mr. Engemeyer who would be in the better position of knowing when and who would be appointed as administrator for the estate. There is one issue that, if I may, I would like to address, and that's the, I didn't really deal with this in the brief, but this claim that I did in the sense that I cited the appellate decisions that said that the suggestion has to be served on the successor or personal representative pursuant to Rule 4. And I don't know if that's the argument being made here. I can't quite figure it out. But I would note in this regard, the court in this case did not impose that burden, I think because of the finding that, or the conclusion that we were not required to identify the person representative or the successor. But also, in the Barlow case, which I cited in the brief, the reasoning of the court in requiring that the person representative be served pursuant to Rule 4 was that to make sure that the person had notice of the suggestion and that the time was beginning to run. Here, that's not the case. Mr. Nunnery represented that he was representing, and in fact does, I think there's been papers filed in this court that he represents the estate, and he was clearly made known of what was going on. Finally, as the district court, as noted by the district court, the requirement of identification should not be imposed here to justify the inexplicable delay in moving for substitution, and I think the court's order addresses that. Finally, I would just say that appellant has not developed any argument on appeal which would warrant reversal of the district court's decision.
Mr. Nunnery said that the district court should have put more weight on the affidavit he filed versus the letter that you filed in terms of making that determination of whether he received the notice of the suggestion of death, or that, what's your response to that?
Well, I think the court clearly states what the Rule 5B requires, which is mailing. It does not require that we show receipt. It just requires mailing. And in the June, and I acknowledge up front, it was an oversight, I didn't do the certificate of service. In my June 15th letter, in which I enclosed the suggestion of death and copied Mr. Angermeyer and Mr. Nunnery, I stated, I am serving the two of them by mail. And in my October 31st letter to the court, which the court relied on, I advised it was served by mail. All I can say is the district court properly concluded, and this is the law, that we don't have to show that he received it, just that it was mailed. And the court found that there was mailing. Any other questions?
Thank you. You have 4 minutes, sir.
With respect to mailing, the rules require affidavit or certification of mailing. A lawyer can't come back 4 months after the fact, tell someone else I mailed it. The evidence in this is the certificate of mailing. That does not exist in the document file. The document filed on June 18th, is there even in the correspondence file? Look, here's a letter in the clerk's file that this is done. And what I believe happened was that I was sandbagged. It was anticipated to file the motion to dismiss around the time of the summary judgment as a strategic advantage. I have no way of impugning anyone's integrity or character, but I think that's what happened. The second issue.
Why would the court, I understood though that the docket shows,
it shows
that
the document.
This June 18 letter was filed with the court. Now that doesn't say anything about you, but in terms of what you're asserting could have happened, why would the clerk of the court in the Eastern District of Wisconsin have indicated that a document was filed in when it wasn't?
But it's possible, Your Honor. It's possible, Your Honor, for any lawyer to go there and file a document and say, he'll file this. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was served on opposing counsel.
Oh, I understand that. I've just been trying to break this down into different steps. It seems that the suggestion of death indeed was given to the court.
Well, I agree with that, and I don't contest that. And what I did
and
after...
There's a cover letter also, and what you're essentially saying is that the district court has no power to find facts when they're disputed about whether something was mailed or not when the proper certificate doesn't exist.
That is partially my argument. But more importantly, if this court has says, look, we are dismissing the federal claim with prejudice, I would have no problem with this decision. But the problem is this. On the state law claim, there was a 30 to 45 day window to even file in state court. So by dismissing the entire action, the plaintiff deceased, who can go in and assert the state law claim again? Moreover, what if the estate says, we're going to file another 1983 under Wisconsin's six-year statute of limitation? We're going to file the same lawsuit.
Was the estate ever in this district court action?
No.
Then how are they precluded?
Well, because they are going to raise the race judicata and saying...
Successor and interest.
They're going to say that Judge Stadmiller's decision is now binding. And we believe that...
Against the widow who was apparently never there.
Right. And what we believe is that the appropriate matter should have been was to at least remand the state portion back to state court. That's our position. And even under Rule 25A, it says that action shall be dismissed as to the decedent. But when he puts his action with prejudice, we're going to see everything in there. All of the issues of the due process have been decided, everything, and res judicata will follow. They ought to at least have their day in court on the state law claim. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel.